Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Susa Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text 24. Atava deva mayaya. Nunam gatir agochara. Chetaso vachasas nripa. Chetaso vachasaschapi. Bhutanam iti nishchaya. Atama deva mayaya. Nunam gatira gochara. Chetaso vachasaschapi. Bhutanam iti nishchaya. Atama, alternatively, Deva, the Lord, Mayayaha, energies, Nunam, very little, Gatahi, movement, Agochara, inconceivable. Chetasa, either by the mind, Vachasaha, by words, cha, or. Api, also, Bhutanam, of all living beings, iti, thus, nishchayaha, concluded. Atama deva mayaya nunam gatira gochara chetaso vachasascha bi bhutanam iti nishchayaha. Translation. Thus it is concluded that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. Okay. No one can estimate them by mental speculation or by word jugglery. Please repeat. Thus it is concluded.
Thus it is concluded.
That the Lord's energies are inconceivable.
The Lord's energies are inconceivable.
No one can estimate them by mental speculation.
No one can estimate them by mental speculation.
Or by word jugglery. Okay. A question may be raised, Prabhupada says, as to why a devotee should refrain from identifying an actor. Although he knows definitely that the Lord is the ultimate doer for everything. So yesterday we discussed that. Huh? A question may be raised as to why a devotee should refrain from identifying an actor, although he knows definitely that the Lord is the ultimate doer of everything. So we discussed that yesterday, that Krishna is the ultimate. He's the ultimate cause. But then, in this case, Kali Yuga is the efficient cause. Okay. And the material cause is the stick. You know, that's beating the cow. So a devotee should, actually Prabhupada says, a devotee shouldn't become angry, at least for some time, to drive away the wrongdoers. Right? He knows that Krishna is causing everything, so this person is causing me problems, or he's causing problems to other people. You know, so doesn't become too disturbed by things. But Prabhupada says for some time we should become angry to drive away the wrongdoers like that. You know? Although ultimately, deep in our heart, we know that everything's controlled by Krishna. You know, and I just play my part, you know, to try and, you know, become angry at these people to get them to stop this kind of violence and so on. Actually, may have actually experienced this. You had to externally act, you know, tough with somebody, especially if you're a father, right? You know, you want not the ill wishes of your children, but you become angry and put on a show, and you know you have to do that, even though you don't want to do it. You know? Okay. Although he knows. Knowing the ultimate doer, one should not pose himself as ignorant of the actual performer. Okay. To answer this doubt, why he doesn't do it, the reply is that the Lord is also not directly responsible. Here I become confused talking about this. For everything is done by his deputed Maya Shakti, or material energy. The material energy is also provoking doubts about the supreme authority of the Lord, the personality of religion. He knew perfectly well that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Lord. And still he was put into doubts. Still he was put into doubts by the deluding energy. And thus he refrained from mentioning the supreme cause. So to me the logic is confusing. But anyway, basic ideas were. This doubtfulness was due to the contamination of both Kali and the material energy. Kali and the material energy. The whole atmosphere of the age of Kali is magnified by the deluding energy. The whole atmosphere of the age of Kali is magnified by the deluding energy, and the proportion of measurement is inexplicable. Wow. Okay. So when Prabhupada was in Berkeley, California, San Francisco, 1975. And I was there. And one reporter asked him, he said, "Swamiji, are there problems in your temples?" And Prabhupada kind of laughed, and said, "This is a material world. There are problems everywhere." Yeah. So in the Krishna book we see, even when Krishna was personally present in Vrindavan, still there were, you know, had horrible demons like Keshi, and they were so terrifying just by their whinnying. You know, they were causing the ladies in Vrindavan to lose their babies, have abortions, you know, like that was a call. Miscarriages like that. So, you know, we can expect that everywhere there's going to be problems in the material world. Okay. Even in Satya Yuga. But in the Kali Yuga, this is the age of problems. You know. Krishna gives everybody the opportunity to act in a rebellious fashion. He doesn't force them into his acceptance authority. So if they want to do this, they want to pretend there is no God, I am God, okay, then he creates the Kali Yuga. Right? How many years in the Divya Yuga? How many years in the Divya Yuga? The four ages taken together are one Divya Yuga.
1,000 times.
Yeah. Okay. That's bigger. The four Satya, Treta, Dwarka, and Kali together, that time is called a Divya Yuga. That's the length duration of the Kali Yuga. 432,000. Which, if you divide by 4,000, is 108. Right? So, 108 divided by 4,000. So, okay, the Dwarka Yuga is twice that. Treta Yuga is three times that. And the Satya Yuga is four times that. So, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 is what?
10.
Yeah. So for Divya Yuga is 10 times as long as the Kali Yuga. Or 4,320,000 years long. Okay. And out of that, the Kali Yuga is only 10%. Right? So that means that it's 40% of the time things are really good. You know, you don't even have to plant anything. Even now devotees say when you're in Hawaii, you can just, you know, if you're kind of staying a little bit out of the city, all your neighbors are there, you can walk around and just, you know, pick papayas. You know, for breakfast you just go for a walk. And you come back with, you know, beautiful, fresh, juicy papayas and avocados and mangoes and macadamia nuts and okay. You know. That's Satya Yuga. In Satya Yuga, you haven't got to plant anything. What's your job, Prabhu? Nobody is really greedy and lusty like that. Basically, everybody is paramahamsa. Okay. So, but in that condition, it's very obvious Krishna's in control. Very obvious there is a God and that kind of thing like that. So people don't like that. But that's 40% of the whole Divya Yuga, right? But after that, Divya Treta, you know, then you have to plant, but you always get back more than you plant. You know, very generous. Nature is so abundant. And in the Dwapara Yuga, whatever you plant, you get back the same amount. You know? The same amount comes back. In the Kali Yuga, you get back less than you plant. You know? You endeavor and you get less result than you do. You know? But that's only 10%. Like that. Prabhupada says that to the demigods and the higher systems, the Kali Yuga looks like a cloud passing over the sun during like a spring day. Spring has come, everybody's come out of their houses, you know, they can be walk around the fresh sunlight, they're happy. It becomes cold, you look up, oh, there's a cloud passing over the sun, right? So nobody even bothers to go back to get a coat on, you just kind of all just tolerate it, you know. So the demigods, Kali Yuga, is like that. You know, this doesn't really bother them that much. You know? But for us, down here, the cockroach level, you know, things are, it's like, it lasts a long time. You know, it's very intense, you know, and so on. You know? And there's a very nice purport in light of the Bhagavat, where Prabhupada talks about the same thing. And this is the stars in the sky, text number 5. 5, yeah. A little picture of glowworms like that. Very Chinese looking picture. The evening in the rainy season is dark all around. There is no sight of the twinkling stars on the horizon or the pleasing moon They are covered by clouds. And the insignificant glowworms become prominent in the absence of the luminaries in the sky. Poet's purport. As there are seasonal changes within a year, so there are changing ages in the duration of the cosmic manifestation. These changes are called yugas, or periods, as there are three modes of material nature. There are also various ages dominated by these three modes. The period dominated by the mode of goodness is called Satya Yuga, Passion, Treta Yuga, Mixed Passion and Ignorance, Dwapara Yuga, and the period of darkness and ignorance, the last period, is called Kali Yuga, or the Age of Quarrel. It's interesting because these match up with the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras in terms of the domination of the modes of nature. So maybe Satya Yuga for Brahmana, Treta Yuga for Kshatriya. So Rama appeared in Treta Yuga. And then Vaishyas, okay, Krishna III is a Vaishya, and Dwapara Yuga, yeah. Let us speculate. The Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel. Ah, Kali Yuga is compared to the rainy season because many difficulties in life are experienced during this damp season. In the Kali Yuga, there is a dearth of proper guidance. Ah. One may take guidance in the evening from the stars and moon. But in the rainy season, the light of guidance comes from insignificant glowworms. The real light in life is the Vedic knowledge. Bhagavad Gita affirms that the purpose of the Vedas is to know the all-powerful personality of Godhead. 15:15. Sarvastya cha ham vridhi sani visto matas mityur gyanam apovanam cha. Vedais cha sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta vid vedakrit eva chaham. So some great Mayavadi Sanskrit scholar says, do you know Sanskrit? You can say, Vedais cha sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta vid vedakrit. Yes. I know Sanskrit. Do you know Sanskrit? Or are you just a technician? Are you just an insignificant walking dictionary or grammar book? Yeah. Purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna, right? Yeah. So, I know the most important Sanskrit mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yeah. And it's a very effective point. Yeah. What's the use? You know all these things. Now that there are machines that can translate Sanskrit, you know. probably quite well, because it's such a technical language, you know. But could load it. You know, nowadays you have to load a lot of rules in like that. But probably they could translate, you know, to some degree. Yeah. I'd probably come up with all the alternative translations, actually. Well, actually it could be translated like this, you know. Of course, and the question is, what is the context? I saw the man on the hill with a telescope. I saw the man on the hill with a telescope. What does that mean? What's the scene? Yes. I was down here, and I had a telescope, and I saw the man on the hill, right? Or I was here, and I saw a man up on the hill with a telescope. Or I think it's like six different possible interpretations like that. Yeah. I was carrying the telescope, but I wasn't looking for it. Yeah. So the context then is important also to understand these things like that and so on. But basically, the purpose of the Vedas, right, is to know Krishna. Okay. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Veda. 15:15. But in this age of quarrel, there are quarrels over the point of the existence of God. My God. In the godless civilization of the age of quarrel, there are countless religious societies, and religious communities, and religious sects, most of them trying to banish God from religion. Glowworms want to be prominent in the absence of the sun and the stars, and these small groups following various religious conceptions are like glowworms trying to be prominent before the eyes of the ignorant mass of people. There are now a number of self-made incarnations that people follow without authority from the Vedic literatures. And there's regular competition between one incarnation's group and another's. Like that. So, Prabhupada's writing is 1961, World War II was over. So I'm not sure. I know in India, you know, where Prabhupada is, there are. I can name some, but I won't do that because of we're broadcasting this, and the recorder's going, and Prabhupada said, you're talking about these things in general. Okay. But specifically, there are groups that are prominent in Bengal, other places, where their particular Baba, you know, is giving light, you know, and, you know, think of me and I will be with you, like that. You know, so many like that. You know. Other places, probably the same thing. And if you look back at World War II, the fascist idea was that Hitler, you know, was more than a human being. It's one of the basic principles of what usually is called fascism. Is that the leader is more than an ordinary person. Hitler was following who? Hitler was following especially, well, different things, but he claimed especially to be like, you know, following Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche, like that. So Nietzsche says that there's problems in the world, everything else, people like this and that, but the Overman is coming, the Übermensch. The Übermensch is coming and he will change everything. I am like the raindrops falling from the clouds on your heads. But the lightning is the Overman, and the Overman is coming. Heroic. You know, Germans love these heroic things. You know. If you ever fly on Lufthansa, you get this taste, really. Especially during a hurricane. So anyway, Hitler was there. And so he said, "Wir sind die Übermensch. We have come. We are the Overmen. We've come to establish the 1,000-year Reich," and all these kind of things. And it was, as was explained to me, they were practicing a lot of tantric yoga or tantra, and on the other side of the channel, what's his name? Winston Churchill was using the Aleister Crowley and the Don Lodge, and also doing a lot of black magic. Nobody can figure out what Ronald Reagan's birth date is. It was a big secret, like that. You know, so you couldn't do black magic or use that. He was very much into astrology. What else? He had a plan of having all these missiles on big carts, so they could move all over the place in the desert. They'd have big roadways, so that the enemy wouldn't know where they were. It was called Index Missile Program. So today it was here, but tomorrow it was there, so they wouldn't know where it was that way. You know, how many missiles had he planned? 108. Okay, yeah. You take his name, Ronald Wilson Reagan and rearrange the letters, there's not one extra, or one short. It spells insane Anglo warlord. So I rest my carefully argued case right here about these things. But in any case, it's a fact that they were taking Hitler's blood, I guess every month, mixing it with water, and then special motorcycle guys would deliver it to the top SS officers for a ritual to drink it like that. It's called potentizing, you know. And by that fashion, they were then connected to the Führer through, you know, just these things work, you know, very subtle activities and so on. That's one. And he was self-proclaimed incarnation of God, and Hirohito in Japan was, you know, son of the god, so forth, coming down. And of course, we got Mussolini, I think, was trying to claim to be following the line of Romulus and Remus, who were also descended from the gods, and so everybody comes along claiming, you know, somehow or other. And competition between different groups goes on like that. I don't think Bill Gates has ever claimed to be incarnation of God. Maybe since 1961, this is 53 years, when Papa wrote this, you know, then people have given up even on that. You know. But we'll see. There are different groups, you know, different ways of claiming, you know, Mormons, okay. Mormons get criticized because people say the Mormons claim you can become God, like that. You know? And so if you ask a Mormon, some Mormons, can you become God? They'll go, yes, you know, like that. But if you read the actual text, it says you can become as God and have your own universe. Sound familiar? Yeah. And I've heard Prabhupada said they're worshiping Lord Brahma, like that and so on, you know. But then Brahma comes along and claims, right? Sometimes he becomes bewildered. He wants to take the cowherd boys, he wants to challenge Krishna's authority. See, he becomes bewildered about his position and thinks he's God, you know. So Prabhupada makes this point that the Vedas, this is what the Vedas establish. Not always rituals and everything else, they establish the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, what he's like, in a basic way. There are now a number of self-made incarnations people follow without authority from the Vedic literatures. And there is regular competition between one incarnation's group and another's. And I don't think Jesus Christ, of course I know Jesus Christ never claimed to be God, you know. He claimed to be non-different, you know, but we say the same thing about Guru. The Guru is non-different, Sakshat, Dvi, Vena, Samasta, Shastra. So he claimed that, but other times he directly said, let's go sit with my father in the house, our Father who art in heaven, you know, so on. But Christian groups, I don't know how many, but you know, actually quite a few, they claim that Jesus is God. Nobody can know God. When God comes and takes a human form, he becomes Jesus Christ. Prabhupada says, because they are Mayavadis, because they are impersonalists, many yogis, you know, like that, their followers can't have a personal conception of God. So all they have is the enormous feet of their Guru Maharaj. Oh, Guru Dev, he's a God man, right? This is their conception. Our Guru has become God, right? Baba Ramdas, you know Baba Ramdas? Henry Albert? Okay, he was a professor from, where is he from? Not Harvard, someplace near there, okay. Anyway, he went to India, he met Nim Karoli Baba, who was like one of these guys, a special guy. His tomb is not far from our Krishna Balaram temple. He was a magician, at least, that's for sure. And it appears that he wasn't so much of a... This happens many times. The actual guy is not a cheater, but his followers, you know, take advantage of him, you know, to push him up there so they can be number three in line, or number two. Yeah. So Henry Albert became Baba Ramdas, came back to the U.S., and he had a... This is why I think I was... 1970s, yeah, kind of, and he had this long playing record, which was, you know, two sides, like 40 minutes, but it was two, so it was 40 minutes. It was just, I listened to the whole thing, it was really incredible for a Western person, because he was describing all these different things from the Vedas and everything else, and these dualities, and it was pretty much, you know, modifying and very enlightening, you know. Then finally he came to the point where you eliminate all the dualities, man, woman, hot, cold, this, me, and you come to the last point of the last duality. And there's that kind of like a wall there, like a ceiling. And nobody knows what's on the other side, but you can't go through without a guru. You know? And my guru has gone through, and now my guru is enjoying sex with every part of the universe at every moment. He's enjoying sex with the microphone. He's enjoying sex with your nose. He's enjoying sex with the wall. He's enjoying sex with the sunset. You know, my God. sign me up. I also want to enjoy sex with everybody. Yeah. But that's you know, how he was advertising what, you know, he's become, you know. Well, what's the other one? The other one, Kankar? I think they're gone now. How could we forget their names? Anyway, their thing was that the ultimate purpose of the ultimate, they had kind of Vedanta Sutra thing. The ultimate goal is to become at cause and not caused by anything else. Scientology. The ultimate goal is to become at cause and not be caused by anything else. Right? Is to become the cause of all causes. Like that, so on, you know? So that was their goal. Scientology. So many, Papa said, you go on and on like that. And even, you know, Jewish tradition, as explained to us by some scholars, they say that, maybe I mentioned this before, that God is a person, but he's always so transcendental we can never quite catch up with him. Like that. One Jewish scholar, philosopher, Maimedes, you know, right, Maimedes, he wrote a book called Guide for the Perplexed. In like, I don't know, maybe the 18th century or something like that. Because there are many sects of Judaism, so you know, a variety, but he's very prominent. And he said, not only is God impersonal, God must be impersonal. Like that. Yeah. It goes on like that, you know, so many things. So again, in Christianity, you find the same thing. You know, Jesus is, God is impersonal, nobody can know him, he becomes Jesus Christ. You know. And so then, you know, different people become prominent, right? Within their community, there's competition between different gods. The Vedic knowledge comes in tradition from the spiritual master through the chain of disciplic succession. And the knowledge must be acquired through this chain without deviation. In the present age of quarrel, the chain has been broken here and there. And thus the Veda is now interpreted by unauthorized men who have no realization. The so-called followers of the Vedas deny the existence of God, as in the darkness of a cloudy evening, the glowworms deny the existence of the moon and stars. Saner people should not be waylaid by such unscrupulous men. If you actually understand what these words mean, you know, Prabhupada's already, it's like five or six words, right? What does waylaid mean?
Huh? Stop and steal.
Yes, the highwaymen would, well, the highway would waylay you. Okay. Unscrupulous? What are scruples?
No feeling of guilt.
Huh?
No feeling of guilt.
Kind of. What's a scruple? I think it's kind of a coin type thing, whatever, something like that. You know, anyway. So but Prabhupada, if you just simply actually any Radhika. Radhika Raman and Gopal, Mother Aruda, when she was teaching her homeschooling, she had to look up the words, and you acquire very erudite diction by studying Prabhupada's books. You acquire a very erudite diction. You learn a lot of big words like that. Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is the summary of all Vedic knowledge. Because it is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the same Personality of Godhead who imparted the Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahma, the first created being in the universe. Srimad Bhagavatam was especially spoken for the guidance of the people in this age, which is darkened by the cloud of ignorance. And the next text is the frog. Can you see him here? It's a great picture, blowing it up. And this is all about. This is these texts are great for interfaith dialogue. Yeah. And actually, the text says that all these people who have some convincing faith in the existence of God, who are actually, you know, qualified people in their own religion, shouldn't be satisfied just to be good religious people and stay within their own community circle, stay within their own temple, right? Serving Mahaprasadam. Yeah. But they should go out, you know, and talk about the glories of God, the Supreme Controller. You know? So many different churches, we have like a concordance with them, with very basic principles. How many people know what is the Nicene Creed or the Credo? If you're a Christian, you don't know this. Shame on you. Nobody knows. How many people here came from Christian? How many people who are baptized in Christian church? Okay. How many people know what the Nicene Creed is? Okay. Our Father. No. We believe in one God.
Yeah.
It works. Keep on. It's the same principle. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Our basic principle is that God is the cause of all causes. Well, that's what we believe. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Prabhartate. And the Christian credo is the same thing. We believe in one God, Father Almighty. Okay, we can accept that. We may be more interested if we're Pushti Marg, what's it called? A baby all mischievous. He was the one God, baby all mischievous. But it's basically it's the same thing. Working on. We believe in one God, Father Almighty. Okay, person. Maker of heaven and earth, by whom all things are created. Okay, very philosophical text. Who for us made our incarnate, who for us made our salvation incarnated is Jesus Christ. Prabhupada accepts that. You know? Born of the Virgin Mary. Probably in some place, Prabhupada even accepts that. And beyond that, it gets into specific pastimes in Leela, which we don't approve or deny. Pania says, we believe in one apostolic church, disciplic succession, and accept one baptism for remission of sins. Okay, look at this. Wow, it's very technical, and we agree. We also do the requirement of disciplic succession, the time of initiation, Diksha Kali Bhakti Kari Atma Samarpan, Say Kali Krishna Kari Tari Atma Sam. You know, the guru, Parampara, takes your simple reactions at that time. Maya passes the ropes of your karma to Radha. Now you have the same karma, maybe, it may be adjusted, but still the same things may be there. Arjuna was still a Kshatriya after he surrendered. But now it's being manipulated by the internal potency. You know, to serve Krishna and appear more purification for yourself. Become higher and more developed. So many principles we agree on. We had an interfaith dialogue program in Peru, and we're there. I said actually the first time I came there, and again I was trying to practice my sannyas dharma, trying to find out if God actually exists. You know. It was very interesting because I took sannyas. First off, I was like, you know, was a kudichak. I was just living in my little office. Actually, I was living in my office. I was a treasurer. And so I would live in my office and sleep on the floor and, you know, very simple, which is basically kudichak. But I would, you know, take a prasad in the temple, everything else like that. You know? So at some point, Hansa Duda decided so many people should take sannyas. And I was one of the designated people. And I said, well, maybe I just still like brahmacharya my whole life and this and that. He said, oh, you should do this. Okay, all right. So anyway, I took sannyas. And then, you know, I was still involved in the temple politics and who's in charge and this and that and which side are you going to support, you know. And Maharaj, when you're preaching, you're going to preach in terms of our group, you know. So I started kind of traveling around the San Francisco Bay Area and staying in devotees' houses in Sacramento and doing program at other temples. And this is what? Kudichak? Hey, Bahudak. I kind of noticed it afterwards. It was just taking a little bit, and that way I could be more independent in my position. It was a little bit uncomfortable, but okay, yeah. But still finally, when I said, you know, I was still felt like different groups were there and people wanted you align or work for them. You're eating with us, so you have to work for us. So then finally I decided, okay, one big project was finished and I just took off. I was going to travel, you know, all over the world and preach. It was frightening because I had enough money to go but not come back, you know. Is there a God or not? So everything worked out. We went from San Francisco on up to Seattle. This was nice. Very nice preaching programs, very effective programs. Came back to San Francisco, but now I was a party Rajakacharya and I could preach about what I wanted to preach. So now I took off all over the world, my God. You know? And yeah, at one point I got a big donation, my first big donation from Dan Doerr, or something like that. Big Doerr. So about $400 and so on. But after that, that was what? That was 1990. And since then, we've been traveling all over the world, you know, with no money. And everything comes. Okay, so now I was going to go internationally. Down in, and I had, you know, I had a credit card. So what I was going to do was, and all I had basically was Dharma Krishna in Peru. I talked to him at the Mayapur Festival with Veer Babu. And he said, yeah, okay, you want to come? Okay, come on, it's okay, you can come. But it wasn't like, okay, this is all set up for you, everything else. It was kind of like, you know, it's a long way, you know, South America. So I had maybe like, you know, some money. But I thought, what I'll do is I'll use this credit card I have, and I'll keep them under the cash, you know, that I can pay the credit card back later. So I went in there, got the whole ticket ready. And then I asked them to use the credit card, and it bounced like that. Because one devotee had given me a donation for $50 with a blank, and I just filled my name and sent it off to the credit card as part of the payment. And so his check had bounced, so therefore they closed down my credit card for 1 month as kind of a chastisement. So I asked the travel agent, how much is it? You know, and he said, it's about, you know, $398. So I took all the money I had, and I had about $398. I was like, wow, man. Maybe Krishna is telling me something here. So I said, are there any airport taxes or anything else? He said, no, this is it. Okay, so I gave him all the money I had. I already have $1 or something, you know. But I had this feeling internally, inside, you know, confirmation, parampara, yeah, that Krishna was telling me, hey, you know, you're supposed to just travel and preach. I'll take care of all your necessities. You just do that. Okay, so as I was leaving the temple, you know, one devotee said, oh, Maharaj, I want to give you a donation. Here's $20, like that. You know, okay, well, thank you. So I have $21 now. Flying the entire other nation. I got to the airport, I checked in everything else, and the guy said, there's an airport tax of $15. And I said, wait, no, the guy told me this and that. And he said, hey, that's airport tax. Okay. So, yeah, for sure. So I had $6. Yeah. And then everything landed, you know, the devotees met us at the airport. Yeah. And so this is, you know, many experiences like that in sannyasa ashram. Even a dog can dance. So you, being alone and traveling and all these kind of things and appreciating, you know, Krishna's vicinity. So we all have to face this. This Varnashram system given by God is very useful. That, you know, if you go directly from Brahmacharya ashram into Vanaprast, like Vaisheshika, or else you can go directly into sannyas. Yeah. But most likely you go for some time in Grihastha ashram and then you try out, you know, enjoying material life, and you realize, hey, this is not working, you know. And then you look, okay, then Vanaprast, you know, then sannyas. It takes time. The connections become very deep, you know, very much deeper than your conscious mind. So it takes time to get out and see things properly. And the stages of sannyas are very natural. You go through these things, you know. Do girls take sannyas? No, but they do something they don't formally. But Lord Chaitanya's mission was to preach the glories of the holy name, right? And Vishnupriya, what did she do? She was a 16-year-old girl, probably pretty good looking. She couldn't travel all over the world. I know one girl. Devotee, she wanted to do traveling sankirtan alone, and after being raped 3 times, she decided it wasn't practical. Like that. Yeah, over some time. It wasn't like 1, 2, 3. It was like, you know, it happened again. The third time it happened, it was like, she's okay, I can't travel all over the world alone. You know, okay. So she changed her mode of operation. So Vishnupriya couldn't take sannyas at that time especially, you know. So what did she do? She had nice saris and big feasts and, you know, offered incense to her husband's picture once a day and got remarried after 6 years. Different dharma for ladies. You know. In the Kali Yuga, if a girl's husband dies, takes sannyas, has big moral fall down, goes to a foreign country, then she should follow her departed lord in the same fire of sacrifice. So if he dies, she should go right into the fire like that. Good. I know one devotee who saw that in Nepal many years ago. One count died, and he was there in the village, and people are, you know, running everywhere, and it was midnight. He asked the guy what's happening. He said, oh, the count died. Very nice man. Everybody's going to be running to be there for them because he has to burn the body before the sun comes up. You want to see it? Yeah. So he went there and the body was on top of the funeral pyre and the priests were doing all these rituals. The sun is already starting to come. And very well dressed and everyone's coming, you know, and people crying. In fact, he looks over and there's one lady coming all covered in white, completely with two girls helping her and the guards in front and after her. And he says, that's the countess. You know? So she could tell she was like, you know, hysterical, you know. And so when was she married to him, probably? How old was she? How old was she when she was married? When she started going steady. 20 years old, 18 years old, after dating seven boys. No, probably when she was about 11 years old, like that. And she still had her teddy bear on her altar, and she put her husband's picture on the altar along with the teddy bear. No, that's so it's just imprinting. So from the time she was like, you know, just barely becoming a human being, she, this is my husband, you know, so on. And so then they have different rituals. Prabhupada said when he was a, you know, a young man getting married, his father arranged his marriage. And at some point, the marriage means basically at 12 years old, you're just, this is it, you know, fixed. They don't even live together. Doesn't even see the girl's face at that time. So at some point, about 16 years old or something, for the first time, he sees her face and so on. So one of these points, before he saw her face, she cooked for him for the first time. Again, maybe about like 13 years old or something, with her mother, she made some challah or something. So Papa said he was there with his mother and his family on one side, other family was there, and the priest was there. It's a marriage of two families. It's not really a marriage, you know, of just two people. You know that it's a great Indian marriage. The fathers agree to cooperate to help their children for six lifetimes or something, you know. So anyway, at some point she's supposed to bring the food over, put it in front of Prabhupada, a little girl, 13 years old. And Prabhupada, she holds the halwa there, Prabhupada grabbed her hand like that. You know, so she started like crying and, you know, and looking at her mother, and Prabhupada's mother chastised and said, oh, I might let her go like that, you know. So she ran over and sat next to her mother, but she was feeling very proud, you know. My husband grabbed my hand, wouldn't let me go. You know, so very nice, you know, very nice, you know. And so then finally, you know, Prabhupada says the first time when the husband and wife see each other's face, she's 16 years old. And he's 24 years old. He's just finished his master's degree, and he's been to Melbourne, and seen the big world and everything else. So she looks up at him. He looks down at her, and he's like God, and she's so innocent and everything else. And I've got to protect her if I have to go through blazing fires. And I'll protect her, you know. So he said, and especially when you take the hand, right? In English, we say my better half. Mm. Yeah. What's the phrase? Is there a phrase in Hindi? It's the same concept.
Yes. Ardhanmendi. Half body.
Okay. In Spanish, what is it? Nobody's here. The other half of the orange, like that. Yeah. So this is a clear concept everywhere. When girl and boy hold hands. At that point, there is a psychic exchange of half the body. It isn't just a concept. It's actually a psychic exchange. The karma changes everything else. You get connected. You know, how many Indian girls will hold hands with boys before they're married? Yeah, forget it. Yeah. So this is a big connection. You know? So this countess, this guy's leaving, she was just hysterical. So finally, she climbed upon the funeral pyre. She told the priest to give her the torch. And he was shaking his hand. He didn't want to give it. He was like, but she's the countess, you know, like that. So he gave it to her. She started the fire. And our friend Gopal Dhillon heard her chanting, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram. Now we're going to test your japa, Prabhu. Jai Shri Ram. The flames were getting bigger, and they finally covered her. People were screaming and everything passing out. Jai Shri Ram. And finally, her voice cracked, and that was it. Okay, yeah. So we have a second-hand testimony. Anybody seen sati here? Voluntary sati. No. I still heard it second-hand. There's a countess, culture, family. Someone like that. Okay, Vishnupriya, Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. So what did she do? What was her austerity? He knows because he knows my lectures. Yeah. She would take one grain of rice for each Maha Mantra. Prabhupada says for each round, but actually it was Maha Mantra, otherwise it's Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And by however much rice she had, I think 3 o'clock, she cooked that with some vegetables, which were available anywhere, and that was all she would take. How much rice do you think is 64 grains? Yeah, I did it one time. That much about that much rice. That's 64 rounds. Yeah. So she was just as good a preacher as her husband, just as much as sannyasini. But she did it through her own dharma, like that and so on. Yeah. So this is the whole process. It's so powerful. And even if we follow it as Vaishnavas, we get so much benefit going through these stages like that. You know? And then we finally, you know, become purified and we can see, you know, what is the essence of the Vedas. We really know that Krishna is there. Right? This is the parampara Prabhupada's talking about. In the beginning, the knowledge is coming down in pieces. I mean, we get covered over. I'm in the mode of ignorance, sometimes in the mode of passion, and sometimes in the mode of goodness. Okay? You know? Oh, I want to go back. Take the rope. I got it. Okay, like that. I got a chance 16 rounds. Yeah. Yeah, my brains are stupid. Everything else is stupid. Okay, my tongue and jaw have to move. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna. Prabhupada says that. So sometimes that's what we're faced with in the Kali Yuga. My Diksha Guru fell down. He married his secretary, ran off. The temple president is a devil. You know, my best friend. You know, I got to chant my rounds. I got to follow the four principles. You know. It doesn't matter. No. So that's, we're connected. We got a connection. And Krishna says, you hang on to this rope, I'll get you out of this mess. You know? Now you're in the middle of the river, the current's tossing you everywhere, this and so forth and so on. But there's a big difference, you know, being in the water with a rope, you know, than there is this being tossed around by the waves. The big wave is coming, you take a deep breath, hold on to the rope. We're going to make it through this. Like that. Okay, other side, we come out. As you get closer to the shore, you can actually feel the, you know, the riverbed under your feet sometimes when you go down and you can push yourself back up. So now you can let go of the rope. No. No, I'm an advanced devotee Prabhu, I don't gotta chant my rounds. And, yeah. So we always, you know, following this. So disciplic succession means, yeah, in the beginning sometimes we have this knowledge, memories. You know, in the brain, okay, it's coming down that way, and we protect those. You know. But real disciplic succession means we're actually connected, like that. You know. We actually experience Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, we actually experience Narottam Das Thakur, like that. And through this personal connection to them, transcendental connection, then we go to Lord Chaitanya. And once you get to Lord Chaitanya, end of the game, that's it. He's so transcendental, he can take you all the way to Krishna. You don't have to go through Dhyaniti, Vijaniti, you know, all the other Madhva Sampradaya. It's there formally, but Lord Chaitanya we're using. So here we go to Krishna. And, I remember, maybe you also have experiences like this. You should have them. I was in the altar doing noontime Artik in Berkeley, and nobody there, of course. You know. So I was offering the incense to Prabhupada's picture, and Prabhupada's picture had this, felt like Prabhupada was feeling very, you know, happy. And I was cut. So my mind was asked, why are you happy, Prabhupada? Because Bhakti Siddhanta wants to talk to you. And I was, my God. So what's going to happen when I offer the incense to Bhakti Siddhanta? So I turned to him and he was looking at me. You're doing okay. Stick with your Prabhupada. And I'm okay. Yeah. Bhakti Siddhanta, if he came in the room, every single one of us would be running into the corner probably like that, looking at him. You know, you see, when he was preaching to people, it was like he was tearing the skin off their face. You know, I already explained that. Didn't you understand the first time? I was already sorry. Yeah. So you probably heard Prabhupada said he wouldn't have accepted any of us as disciples like that. He might have had his chant Hare Krishna and stay in the ashram doing something, you know, so on. But Prabhupada said Lord Ram accepted monkeys, you know, to help him, so I could accept these Westerners like that. Okay, yeah. So this is, you know, parampara. It's an actual experience. You begin your chanting with, what do we have from Narottam Das Thakur? Parampara. Parampara, what do we have from Narottam? That's an obvious answer. Songs. We've got these songs, you know, a lot of songs. Yeah. So as you're chanting them and singing them, you can actually start to get realizations of what Narottam was thinking about. What's his perspective? And it's very, just as real as I'm seeing somebody and talking to them, I have this personal experience through the contact. And so, the same way, you have the same experience that Narottam is there, this is what he was like, and what he was thinking. In the beginning, of course, these things are like, you know, like, you know. But after a while, with someone like Prabhupada, it's a continuous feeling. He's always with his spiritual master, always with Bhakti Siddhanta. And he knows what he's saying is true, you know. So many times Prabhupada would say specific things about do this, don't do that, everything else, and it would work out. you know, like that. You know, there's no way he could know, you know, so on. Yeah. And also dealing with people like that, Prabhupada, his connection, you know, one glance, you know. People, one place, Prabhupada was there for like 3 nights in Atlanta, and Jayapataka Maharaj was talking to all the people and their experiences, and he said it would take like, you know, 3 weeks to go through everybody's experience. It was like Prabhupada was like many, many human beings, you know. Like he would look at somebody and wonder, I wonder where he got his glasses. They're pretty good. You know? It was like, from his point, Hansudita told us that Prabhupada said, the spiritual master doesn't do anything unusual. He gives Bhagavad Gita classes, chants Hare Krishna. But through him, the Paramatma does many things like that. So Prabhupada would look at somebody and it would take like, you know, 3 minutes for this person to explain, you know, the experience he had. Prabhupada looked at me and this and everything else. And, you know, bija. You know. So that's your, now you have to cultivate that. I remember Prabhupada. You know, so, you know. So this kind of connection is what's necessary. And it's possible through the standard instruction of the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And then we can see like all these different groups and people and stuff like that, and what is their proportion. Basically, you know, many people, they worship Bill Gates. They're following him. They want to be in his group. They want to, and this isn't the mode of passion. You worship some big person, some big man like that. And so in society, people, they take shelter of different cultural heroes and things like that. And people need, you know, some kind of shelter like that. You know? And so then we can explain to people what's the proportion, what's the situation like that. You know? Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam.
Maharaj, would you like to tell us how you came in contact with ISKCON and Srila Prabhupada?
How I kind of came in contact? No, I was already like, you know, some Christian background and some knowledge and everything else. But, you know, it was like a sunset or some general idea. And then one devotee was selling a book, you know. And I just graduated from the university trying to figure out what to do, you know. And he was preaching to me, you know, all shaved up, brahmachari. And I was doing a yoga then, so I was blanking my mind and listening to him. And I had to make a choice, actually, between Maya and the book. Maya was over there. If you buy this book, I will make your life hell. You know. But I thought it was the right thing I should do, it, hearing everything. So I bought the book for $10. It was the Krishna book. And I started reading it very, you know, because I was already in a good position, so I was reading it very carefully and actually I was reading in a very contemplative sense. The original Krishna books were this big, mm-hmm. and they're 13.5 type. Beyond 11 point, your mind starts to see each word. It's like, you know, but below that, actually you just kind of like this flow and you're not actually seeing the words, you're just reading it like that. But beyond 11 point type, your mind starts to see each word. The 13.5, forget it, I would read the sentence, and I would go back and read it again, and I would like just get it just so that, you know, I could contemplate it, I could get the whole thing at one time, smarna, like that. So I didn't know exactly what's happening, but that was, you know, it's a very good book, you know. And the first story was the story of the Shantaka Jewel, which I always remember, and it says that this happened before the birth of Pradyumna described in the previous chapter. But this was the first chapter in the book. Like this. So I was going back like this, you know, and turning back, and I was looking like, you know, like that. So I was looking like, here's I couldn't find the previous chapter, you know. Then finally I noticed in the back it said, Volume 2. This rascal sold me the second volume of this. So then eventually I liked it so much, you know, that I went to the library and found Volume 1. You know, so on. You know. But that was my first contact with Prabhupada, was through sound. And probably it was Krishna's arrangement, because when you walk into a temple, there's all these formalities and rituals and everything else. You know. Even when I went to the temple, it was already like, with many good things, which I was ready for, and other things, you know, which were just nice in general. But beyond that, there were so many strange things. And, you know, how the devotees were applying this and everything else. 1973, I guess it was, 72. You know? But two things very much impressed me when I was reading the Krishna book. The first one was that Prabhupada explained all these different things, all these different religions, groups, everything was explained in general sense. And I could see, okay, now it's all clear, what's going on, everything else like that. Wow, what a nice book, nice philosophy. And the second thing was reading all these stories, because the Krishna book has all these stories. Jarasandha attacked Mathura with 140 billion people, and Krishna came out and chopped all their hands off and their heads, and the elephants looked like little lakes, islands in the blood. The heads looked like tortoises. The jewelry looked like sand. Then Balaram came out and made it even more like that. Anybody who hears this story will never fear the problems of enemies the rest of his life. So I was reading this thing. I read a lot of science fiction before, so on. So I was reading this, and suddenly my mind said, wow, this is either the biggest lie I've ever heard, because Prabhupada was presenting it all as the absolute truth, And he was kind of an obviously intelligent guy, a philosophical person. So I said, this is either the biggest lie I've ever heard, or else it's the absolute truth. So my intelligence said, well, hey, fella, if it's an absolute lie or the absolute truth, either case, it's absolute. Oh, you're right. Wow. So it was just self-evident. Yeah, the book was self-evident. There's just nothing else like the Krishna book. You start reading it a little bit sober. So I was following some yoga, vegetarianism at that time. So that's kind of like, steps like that. And then gradually, of course, it's a gradual process, go to the temple, different things like that. I'm still eliminating doubts, and different doubts, confusions, like that. So any other questions or comments about different religious groups, about deviations within ISKCON? Prabhu, ISKCON is pure and perfect. Somebody comes sometimes, right? They tell you that, oh, I've got the devotees now, and this is it, everything's perfect. I'm going to sell my automobile and give it to the temple president, and I'm going to become a full-time devotee in the ashram. What do you tell them? Hey, mate. It's a good place. But I think Prabhupada said that the outside, the modern world, people are 80 to 90% mad. In the ordinary world, 80 to 90% mad. So taking ISKCON is like, kind of to live here, you've got to kind of be basically a Madhyamadhikari. Taking that is 50% mad. I mean, not everybody. I mean, some people may only be 40% mad or 30% mad, or somebody may even be like, not completely sane. Here and there you may find a few completely sane people. But it's not for surprising that devotees, actually Prabhupada said, ISKCON is like a bag full of rocks with sharp edges, right? And you get always bumping into somebody else. Someone in the ashram likes to go to bed at 9 o'clock and get up at 1 o'clock. You like to go to bed at 10 o'clock and get up at 4 o'clock. So guys are turning the lights on, making around. It's just like everybody's irritating everybody else. But Prabhupada says you stay in the bag, right? You see, eventually all the rocks become very smooth like that. Somebody's been a devotee for quite some time. He knows how to live with other devotees and carry on like that, and how to avoid problems. Madhyamadhikari is expert at avoiding the demons. And he's also expert at avoiding the demoniac tendencies in his own godbrothers and godsisters like that. Prabhu, I'll come right back and help you with this offering. I've got to go right now. I'll see you in a couple minutes, Prabhu. Like that. Yeah. So we learn how to avoid these problems. And then, develop friendship, relationships with the good aspect in our God brothers and God sisters, like that, so on. So very good position, Madhyamadhikari. It's workable. The problems are manageable in this level, like that. So it's gone. Yeah.
For example, you are saying that when we read the bhajans of Narottam Das Thakur, we try to know his mood.
Or sing them,
So for example, in one bhajan, Narottam Das Thakur is saying that Kaam, Bura, Ramachandra, Kamalaj, like lamenting. So it is mentioned here that when he was writing that bhajan, Rupa Goswami was going that time, and Sanatana Goswami was going. And so Ramachandra Kamalaj was a disciple of Jeev Goswami. And so Jeev Goswami had summoned him to Vrindavan, while Narottam Das Thakur was in Vrindavan. And Narottam Das Thakur was a very great friend of Ramachandra Kaviraj.
They were close.
And both of them were performing devotional service.
Yeah.
So when he was called by Jiva Goswami, he left. And Narottam Das Thakur was left alone.
Yeah.
And his Guru Lokanath Swami was already gone by that time. Yeah. So then there was no news about Jiva Goswami and there was no news about Ramachandra Kavidas.
Yeah.
So Narottam Das Thakur understood that they will also go. So he felt devastated.
Yes.
So he was writing that bhajan. He was writing the verge of death.
Yeah, actually I understand. Then Jiva Goswami left too. And then he had the association of Ramachandra together. The two of them were like kind of carrying on because he's a Manjari, you know. And so they were feeling separation. And finally when Ramachandra left, you know, and at that point he was like, you know, nobody told him because they knew, okay, if Babaji Guru Maharaj finds us out, he's just not going to hang around anymore. So after a few days he understood. Then he still went into complete absolute lamentation, went down to the bank of the Ganga to offer water for Ramachandra's well-being. The disciples went with him. He was standing in the water. His body dissolved and turned into milk and disappeared just like that. So there's no samadhi for Narottam's body. He just dissolved like that. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And also too, he's a Manjari. You know, so he says, Radha Krishna Pranamore Yugala Kishore. You can think of like, you know, 11-year-old girl. Because all these rumors about Radha and Krishna, and Radha's a bad girl, you know, because she's associating with Krishna, eating cookies with Krishna or something like that. And all these like criticism of them, their character and everything else. And so, you know, 11 years old, I don't care, living or dead, I will worship Radha and Krishna. You know, it's a different humor than thinking of like a 55-year-old, you know, male sannyasi body and stuff like that. But that's the kind of ideas you get. You start chanting and, you know, appreciating like that and so on. But we always confirm these things with guru, sadhu, and shastra. You know, we have our realizations. But actually it says, whatever realizations you have, you should confirm those with guru, sadhu, and shastra. Jeez, yeah. Come on, let's go. Tesham evnu kampartham. Yeah, we have to have this connection with Krishna in the heart. Otherwise, nothing's going to make any sense. You can't even carry your material life on without the Paramatma. So as we begin to get these realizations that guide us in Krishna consciousness, which are there from very early, especially after second initiation, Prabhupada says, and at that point, what we should always confirm these with guru, you know, sadhu, and shastra. Otherwise, we'll start doing things like blowing up the Twin Towers in New York or, you know, or something else. Prabhupada told me, you know, weird things devotees do, you know, stuff like that. Okay, so this is the light of the Bhagavat. The parampara can give us the intelligence to avoid being waylaid by different things. Outside, okay, many Bhapabhyas were kind of okay, but inside, yeah, and within ISKCON, there have been with the mother's party. At one point in the very beginning, the sannyasis were saying Prabhupada is God, some sannyasis. He's just not telling us that because he wants us to understand for himself, and he's actually angry with us because we're not understanding he's God. This went on, I won't say who the sannyasis were, and then Prabhupada told me they should leave the temple and travel and preach on their own, like that. And later on came the mother's parties where there was one man with, that was San Francisco, was one of them, Jivadas, and about 14 mothers doing sankirtan collecting, and some of them were collecting, the biggest one, I won't mention her name, was collecting about $1,000 a day, which with inflation is probably running about $3,000 a day. That's, you know, picking, collecting. And then the second one was coming in about maybe like $600 a day, $1,800 a day, and the rest $400 a day, so $1,200 a day. So you can think, they were making about $1 million a year collections, about $3 million a year. And I was the treasurer. So they would come back from traveling sankirtan, the mothers traveling sankirtan with these big bags, things of coins, like, you know, and I had to like deal with all of them. It's a very unusual time. And, oh, don't worry, they're pure Prabhu. You know, it's like one man with 14 women, and Lord Nityananda is protecting them, you know. And so, then Prabhupada left his body, and Hansaduda was coming to be our zonal guru, next Prabhupada, become our zonal guru. So our president was writing, you know, because he was doubtful about this, he should stop these things. The president wrote and said, you can't understand this, you know, they're all pure and everything else. And Hansaduda wrote back, he said, one man with 14 women, they're having sex, and they're having a lot of it. So he got there. Okay, he's just a guru. You know, your sankirtan leader is your eternal husband. Okay, there's a whole philosophy going on. He's actually like an incarnation of God for you all. You should follow him. Take initiation from Hansaduda, but that's all. He's basically a rhythmic idea. Then Hansaduda had this kirtan. It was so incredible. He was probably said he was the emperor of kirtan. And it was just odd. It was incredible. Like nobody ever heard like something like that. So now the whole controversy goes on. And then Mother Vaibhavi, Chiru's wife, came back to the treasury room and said, "You got a gun?" Oh, I said, "Well, yeah, I heard it. Give it to me." "Okay, wow, okay, here's the gun, okay. There's no safety, it's a 38. Okay, she put it in her sari." So then Hansaduda went over with Sarabhi Swami into the house next to the temple where the mother's party was, and with a 38 under him, that's the kind of guy he was. So he started confronted Jiva. Okay, before Jiva was a devotee, he'd been a criminal, like that bank robber. And so he naturally became the Sankirtan leader. Maybe this. I don't know if people remember all these things, to remember these things. He pulled into a gas station one time with a friend off the highway. The guy came up to put the gas in. He pulled a shotgun out, stuck it in his face. "This is a robbery. Give us all the money." Just at that moment, a highway patrol car pulled off the freeway with these big highway patrol guys. They saw this. Jiva saw them. Tossed the gun to the guy and said, "Yes, I'm joking. It's not loaded." You know, the guy grabbed it and said, "Oh, well, excuse me, officer, you really scared me there for a second." You know, and he put the gas in. So these police guys were looking at this. Well, I guess it's just their friends or something like that. They pulled out. He took the shotgun back and said, "It is loaded. Give me the money." eventually, he was in prison for armed robbery. Got out, became a Hare Krishna devotee, and very quickly became the Sankirtan leader. It was fun. He would get always, you know, it was like, "Yeah, go get those karmis today," this and that. It was like, you know. And finally then, Hansaduda confronted him. In the beginning, he said, no. And finally, he just broke down and said, "Yes, everything's happening. I can't control myself, you know. I'm giving the girls vitamin pills that are amphetamines, you know. I have connected with about four of them. We're eternally married, you know. Everything else, I'm skimming off, like, about $1,400 a day or something, skimming it off for my expenses, and you know, I'm back into heroin again, and I can't control myself. Save me." He said, "All right, you take sannyas right now," like that. "And all of you, come inside." Huh? He was using what? "Come inside." And all the women, very intelligent. You know, they're all standing there, listening outside the door. They all came in. You know. So next morning was the sannyas initiation. He's on the phone all over the world. I'm the new incarnation. We're Prabhupada's appointed gurus. Okay, we've gone from the mother's parties to the appointed guru. Okay, and I'm the treasurer in the middle of all this. And so then mother so and so came and said, "Prabhu, I want so and so much money for 140 yards of white cloth." So they all became widows. So he's sitting there, the fire sacrifice, and they're all sitting there in white. They all become widows, you know. And then Mr. Black came in. Okay, Mr. Black was this guy. He was this black guy who looked like a lizard. He had this body was like all muscles. And he had a really low IQ. He was in and out of jail for different things. And he would come to the temple, and you know, you had to know how to deal with the guy. Like he was closing up, and he didn't want to leave, you know. So I would say, "Well, Mr. Black, you're closing up now, but hey, you can stay if you want to and get up with us tomorrow morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. We get up, take cold showers. You like it, aren't you?" "Oh, that's okay. I think I'll go now." So he walked in, and right in the middle of the fire sacrifice, he saw all this. And it was just too bizarre for him. So he started going, "Hum, hum, hum." Hansaduda didn't know him. He was just brahmacharis. So brahmacharis ran over, picked him up, four of them. The one guy who was kind of like his out-of-control devotee sort of punching him in the face while they're carrying him out. And he started saying, "I likes it. Give me more. Give me more. I likes it. Okay." So, and the fire sacrifice is going on. He's outside the front door banging against the window with blood on his face, full-size window. We call the police. He goes away. The police show up. We go off with them. They find him about two blocks away by the gas station. This young police officer gets out and starts talking to him. "Where are you going?" "I'm going home, you know." "What happened to you?" "I ran into a locomotive." "Okay," like that. But I'm going to go get a machine gun and come back and adjust the problem. "Well, have you got a gun? Have you got a gun now? "No, I haven't got a gun now." The guy's talking. So behind him, I see like three police cars show up with five police officers, including a captain, and they all have their clubs out behind their backs. So they know Mr. Black, you know. They're standing behind him like that. This young kind of guy is watching them, you know. And finally the captain goes,
like that. And he says, well, I think I've got to take you in. And Mr. Black says, do I have to go? And you can see all these guys like that. He says, yeah, yes. He says, well, okay. Oh, yeah, like that. Goes on like that. So that was the next deviation, was the divine guru. And so are you going to be deviated by the next deviation? You know, like that and so on. Because within ISKCON, different people, we have to be keep on going higher and higher. Devahuti and Kardamamuni, Kasyapa and Nokashina, what was the other one? Pregnancy of Ditti in the evening. So we'll acquire more and more subtle problems as we go. And everybody, in fact, the final thing is you become God. That's my last thing. So by keeping in touch with the Bhagavatam and stuff like that, then we can go through all these. So Prabhupada ki, Prabhupada's mom on tricking. Back home, back to God. Let's discuss individual. Come forward.
Yeah.